A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome along to a special international edition of the La Liga Lowdown podcast, part of the Radio Staccano family. I'm Hugh McTeer, your host for this one, with David Garrido trapped in the Valencian zoo and with Alexandra Johnson busy sobbing over some meatballs in a Galician IKEA in despair at Sweden's draw with Norway. It means I'm joined by the other two members of the La Liga Lowdown squad, Paco Pollitt from Valencia and Roman de Arquer from Barcelona. Paco, how are you?
Hi, Ewan. How are you doing? Yeah, I actually was able to get David outside from the zoo.
Well, that's good
so
news.
So I guess he should be back to... Yeah, he should be back to hosting pretty soon.
And Roman, how are you? You've not seen David looking around any zoos.
No, I haven't. A bit sleepy, to be honest, after the Malta game, but holding on.
Exactly. Well, let's get cracking on because we do have a lot to discuss, not because it was exciting, but because Spain have played two matches in Group F of Euro 2020 qualifying, and they've won them both. We need to remember that. They beat Norway 2-1 in Valencia on Saturday and Malta 2-0 away from home this Tuesday night. We're recording just after the game. But both of these victories were about as convincing as Sergio Ramos promised to stop taking Paninkas. This was Malta, remember, the third lowest ranked side in UEFA. And yes, I am including Scotland and UEFA here. And almighty Spain could only win by two. I mean, back in 1983, they smashed the Maltese 12-1. This time, there was only two. So, Roman, a simple yet complicated question to start off. Why can't Spain score any goals?
Well, it's really a tough question. When I was watching the game against Malta, it reminded me of Spain in the World Cup, where they had lots of possession, passing horizontally, but they were never capable of getting close enough to the area. I mean, they had a few shots, they had some good opportunities, but it's a internal problem which has been there for a while, and it's hard to solve for Luis Enrique. It's hard to solve for all the coaches who have been there lately. And to be honest, I can't give you a specific answer right now. It's something really complicated where the strikers have to prove their worth and like step up.
Yeah, and with 84% possession that only turned into two goals, I agree with you. I think it was a lot similar to the Russia game at the World Cup, and we saw against Norway giving away a penalty that almost cost Spain. This is a problem they're going to have against smaller teams, isn't it, Roman?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when teams are capable of defending and close themselves really, really close to their area, to their box, to their goalkeeper, it feels like Spain is incapable of deciphering or finding a way through those players. They're lacking this, I guess, creativity. They have to move the ball quicker, because if not, they just get into position and there's no way of finding any space. So that is the problem that they're going to find and we're seeing in the last few games.
For sure, and it was a very inexperienced lineup that's been put out in the second game against Malta in the absence of Luis Enrique, who very sadly had to return home to attend to a family emergency. I was amazed at this stat from friend of the pod, Robbie Dunn. Sergio Ramos was there with his 162 caps. The other 10 members of the starting lineup had 89 caps between them. So Paco, was there too much rotation for this game?
Yeah, possibly it is true that one of the talking points in the next few hours is going to be Luis Enrique's absence. But I believe that the manager who was in charge of the team, who was his assistant Robert Moreno, really did what Luis Enrique had ordered before he left for personal reasons. And yeah, I believe that they are trying to come up with the proper blend or the proper mix in a few key positions on the team, especially in front. Morata obviously had to play because he really needed the confidence. Marco Asensio was right next to Sergio Ramos and Morata himself, the only one to start once again after the first game against Norway. And I believe that it's due to the fact that both Morata and Asensio needed confidence and minutes and opportunities. But yeah, I see it quite logic that Luis Enrique is trying, I believe, almost half of La Liga's best players nowadays, because he's trying to find those two, three, four reliable players who can be part of the backbone of his team.
Yeah, I really agree. And we did see a stronger lineup against Norway on Saturday. Before we dissect that match, Paco, you were there. Can you tell us, firstly, what was the atmosphere like at Mestalla for the first Spain game there since 2005 and the first in the city of Valencia since 2014? What was the atmosphere like?
Well, I had doubts regarding how many people would go and actually attend the game. It was Saturday night. As you know, Valencia were still reeling from the Fallas holidays, but it was pretty great.
By reeling, you mean hungover, of course.
Yeah, hangover. You know that the week after Fallas is hangover week because people are still not to their usual selves. But people really were able to attend and be in a pretty good atmosphere. Almost 40,000 in attendance. And regarding the game, I believe that the people were happy with the Rodrigo Moreno scoring, for example. That was one of the highlights of the night. Also, Dani Parejo playing a pretty great game in the midfield with 75 minutes under his belt, where he proved that he is one of the most informed midfielders in La Liga. So overall, it was a great experience. And remember that the reason for the game being played at Mestalla was Valencia's centenary, which actually 24 hours later had another great attendance in Mestalla with almost 40,000 playing or watching, in this case, the Partido de las Leyendas, the legends game between Valencia's former glories, such as, well, there were quite a few great ones. We saw Fernando Gómez, we saw Albelda Baraja playing against a national team made of legends. And overall, the weekend was excellent for Valencianistas and also for Valencia football fans.
Yeah, there was a really cool photo there of Canizares with the fireworks going up in the sky. And you're right, a perfect weekend. And you mentioned it there, you touched on it, Rodrigo scoring a goal to give the home fans in Valencia something extra to cheer about. I'm going to ask you this, Paco. The hometown hero, Rodrigo, he scored in this game, he started in this game. But should he be the starting forward for Spain?
This is going to be a hot topic, okay? And I believe it's going to be a recurring one from now on until maybe the next summer 2020. But I think nowadays Rodrigo is in a better form and in a better shape than Álvaro Morata. He might have scored twice against Malta, a brace, but I think Rodrigo has a better gelling with his teammates. He opens more spaces in the defense. He moves more swiftly and has a better pace nowadays than Morata. But I understand that also Luis Enrique is trying to get Morata engaged and getting that sense of being part of a team. So, yeah, I think that Rodrigo should be a starter, and why not? He should be paired with Álvaro Morata, because I believe that both of them are the best and the strongest pair of strikers nowadays.
Yeah, and Roman, who do you think should be the starting forward for Spain? Rodrigo, Diego Costa, Iago Aspas, Morata maybe is the other option. I personally like Morata a lot, even if he missed about half a dozen headed chances over the course of this past week. And Luis Enrique does seem to like him too. He said the Norway match was his best one with Spain, especially because of his hold-up play. And we saw that was all in play. That was a factor against Malta. So what do you think of Morata, and who do you think should be the starter, Roman?
Well, it's clearly not a coincidence that Morata has played the two games with Spain this week. So, I mean, he's clearly the best option, and for me, he is a really good option. I mean, he's a very physical player. He can use his body, but he's also technical. So that's something that Spain really looks in a striker. He's probably the closest we have to maybe Diego Costa, but of course, Costa is not at his best yet. He's come from an injury recently, and he's still finding his form. So I think Morata is a great option. Although players like Rodrigo, like Aspas, they're great strikers, but the feeling is that they're maybe playing better with their club, and when it comes to playing with the national team, they're missing that extra punch they usually provide in their own team. So at the moment, I think Morata is probably the best choice for now.
And moving away from the centre-forward topic, Paco, I'll ask you this. What do you think was the strongest position group for Spain over these matches? Was it the fullbacks, the midfield, or was it the forwards?
Having the chance of watching the game live, you see those little details that usually you miss when watching the game on TV. And I really liked the way both Dani Parejo and Sergio Busquets blended together, because they obviously never play together. One belongs to Barca, another one plays for Valencia. But they had that chemistry, and frankly, they seemed that they had been playing together forever. And I really liked the way the midfield played against Norway, even though it is true that the Norwegians, and it was very surprising in my opinion, they pressed very hard, and they ran a lot. They had a very important physical endurance throughout the game, and that's why they put Spain into trouble in the second half. But I think that the midfield was a highlight in the game against Norway, and I believe that a strong Spanish national side needs to have as their main focus their midfield. Because in 2008, that was the keystone of the whole team. Obviously, you had excellent strikers like Fernando Torres, David Villa, but the magic really happened in the boiler room, you know, Sala de Máquinas, where the brains are working. And I think that Luis Enrique should focus his energies in making a strong midfield who is able to defend and be physically strong, but also have that intelligence, creativity, and generate chances, clear chances for the forwards to score.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that about the midfield. I think any Spain team that's going to have success will be built from the middle. But we have to remember, all these Spain teams that won trophies had great centre-back partnerships. There was Ramos, Puyol, Piqué. These guys always combined together. Right now we've got Sergio Ramos. But who partners him? Inigo Martinez did so against Norway and gave away a silly penalty. Mario Hermoso, he played against Malta, but he's had busier siestas in this game. He couldn't really prove himself. There was nothing to do. So there's no obvious centre-back option, is there, Roman?
No, there actually isn't a good or a great option as there was before with Piqué and Sergio Ramos. I mean, those two were top quality centre backs, and now we're having troubles to find a substitute for Piqué. Of course, I mean, Spain has lots of good centre backs, or very good centre backs, but not top quality. So then, of course, Hermoso, Íñigo Martínez, Sergio Gómez, they're good centre backs with their teams at their level, but of course, when it comes to playing with a national team, you're expected a lot, and it's really hard to find that level of quality in Spanish centre-back. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to find who is the right one. I mean, Hermoso was pretty good today, but of course, he barely had any job against a team like Malta. And Norway was tougher. Íñigo, as you mentioned, gave away a penalty. He could have been better. But, I mean, it's going to be really hard for Luis Enrique to find somebody else to join Sergio Ramos.
Yeah, and then Sergio Ramos, of course, getting the penalty, Panenka, scoring for a fifth Spain game in a row, which is quite incredible for centre-back. And Paco, I'm going to ask you this, because you were in the stadium, I'm sure this passed through your mind as he was about to take that penalty. If you're a goalkeeper going up against Sergio Ramos about to take a spot kick, and you know it might be a Panenka, what on earth do you do?
We actually called it in the stands.
You thought it was going to be.
David Garrido was right next to me, and we were talking about the penalty. We had fans surrounding us, and we were talking in a whole row of seats. He's going to totally take it Panenka style, and he did it. So he's becoming predictable in that sense. So if I was a goalkeeper, a top quality goalkeeper, I would surely stand my ground and not try stopping it on one side or the other. Because he'll eventually is going to miss. And once Ramos misses one Panenka-style penalty, criticism is going to be so big. that he won't have that much will of trying that again. So I would surely try to stop it by standing completely still, frozen, and simply waiting for the ball to come into my arms.
Yeah, I'm sure the goalkeeper must have thought that. He must have done his homework, must have thought that. I don't know, maybe if he stands still and Ramos puts it in the corner, he looks silly to everyone back in Norway who hasn't seen Ramos do this every couple of weeks in La Liga. I don't know, it's a game of chess that every time Ramos steps up, and I for one love it. But that's all we've got for this first half of this podcast. But stay tuned, because after this, we're going to talk some more Spain, also look at under-21s, at Catalonia, and at the return of La Liga.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the second half of this International Week special. It wasn't just Spain who were playing this week, as we also had a match involving the Catalan national team. Now, Roman, how does the Catalan national team work? Is it a national team? Does the fact that they didn't have to buy their shirts from Decathlon sports store like Venezuela make them more of a national team? How does it work? You're there in Barcelona. Can you tell me a bit about the history of this team?
Well, I mean, Catalonia wants to be, of course, a national team at the level of Spain, at the level of France.
Yeah, I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, of course, but it's not easy. I mean, it's a political thing, which is very complicated to explain, of course. But I mean, every once and then, when they have the opportunity, they try and play a game, and this time it was against Venezuela. And I mean, Catalonia have a pretty good team. I mean, we saw lots of good players on the field, but it has to be said that lots of players couldn't go to the game because, of course, their clubs didn't want them risking themselves getting injured or whatever before such important games, fighting for not going down into Segunda División, like players from Huesca, like Enrique Gallego, from Villarreal, like Gerard Moreno, from Valladolid, like Ruben Alcaraz, or even Alex Moreno from Rayo Vallecano. I mean, all these players could have been in the national squad. They would have made an even more powerful Catalonia team. But unfortunately, they weren't allowed to go. Although, I guess it was a good decision because, for example, Juanpi, he played with Venezuela and he got injured. Although it seems it won't be too bad at the end. He was actually crying on the field. He was quite worried. So that was something to take into account. And I mean, during the game, Catalonia were pretty good. So were Venezuela. I think it was a very equal game, especially in the first half. But then in the second half, it was much more entertaining. The goals came for sure. And the player, a young talent from Barca's youth team, Riqui Puig, 19 years old. As soon as he came on, he gave a great pass to Montoya, which ended up in the first goal by Bojan Krkić. And from there on, he was just the creative player in that midfield, which allowed Catalonia to get many more chances. So that was a pretty fun game to watch.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when whenever Catalonia play and when the Basque Country play, and it always brings up the debates of which of the 17 autonomous communities has the best team. And I'm sure if you made an Andalusia or Valencian community or Madrid team, they'd all be very good. It's it's always interesting to see and have these debates when these matches come around. And going back to the Spain, the official Spain national team, we had a couple of friendlies for the under-21s. They beat Romania 1-0 and Austria 3-0. So Paco, how do you rate their chances ahead of the European Championships this summer? Is this current under-21 side better than the 2017 team of Kepa, Saúl and Asensio?
Well, it is true that there's plenty of talent in this under-21 squad. Obviously, as a Valencia reporter, I have to talk about Carlos Soler, but also, for example, Borja Mayoral, who is playing for Levante this season on loan. And I think they have a very good team, not only because of the two wins this week, but also because if you compare man by man, the starting 11 for Spain with, for example, other superpowers around Europe, I think that maybe France and England can be equally unstoppable. But nowadays, I think Spain are top favorites, or one of the top favorites for that European Championships next summer, because the quality is there, but also the team is learning to defend very well. I saw the other day their game against Austria, a 3-0 win, and they showed unbeknownst proficiency when defending. So I think that they're going to be a very tough team to defeat next summer in that European Championships.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch in Italy and San Marino when that comes up in June. And sticking with, you mentioned one of the guys there, but sticking with the under-21s, you had Carlos Soler. He had a great week. It's overall been a great international break for Valencia. You already told us about all the alcohol everybody was able to drink, all the centenary match, the fireworks. And on top of that, you had goals from Rodrigo, Carlos Soler, Ferran Torres got a couple for the under-19s as well. Even Cheryshev with Russia's had a ball. Can this fantastic international break help the confidence at Valencia for the final stretch of the domestic season?
Well, I have to speak about one particular point, Denis Cheryshev. Whenever he plays for Russia, he becomes Ballon d'Or material. Straight Ballon d'Or material, because he's like the best player hands down of that team. He scores, he assists, he's amazing on top of the pitch, and then he comes back to Valencia and suddenly it seems that they have given us back the weird cousin who is resembling the real Cheryshev, but not actually him. Okay,
maybe you have to get rid of the bat symbol that's caused so much controversy and put like a Russian eagle on the Valencian badge. And
I guess DC Comics wouldn't be that happy if we keep talking about the bat symbol, because they seem to have a beef with Valencia regarding that. But well, I can tell you guys that it's absolute nonsense, and it's not going to have zero consequence regarding Valencia's logo or Valencia's badge, because the bat has been there for 400 years. So I think that the suits and the lawyers in DC Comics pocket are not going to have success in this sense. And going back to Rodrigo, Soler, Ferran, yeah, I think that Valencia has been slowly picking up their own pace, slowly building up momentum on basically in Copa del Rey. They were able to move past to the next round and then beat Getafe and then beat Betis and get into the final, and that has been able to slightly improve the overall mood of the team, the attitude, the morale. And I think that is going to be a crucial part of the last stretch of the season, because you can see it amongst players. Rodrigo Moreno wouldn't have scored with Spain 2 months ago, because he was just unable to score, to put the ball into the goal. But nowadays he is, because he has his confidence back. So I expect these players to keep improving, and some of them, maybe Gonzalo Guedes is the one missing, so that Valencia can be finally a Champions League contender in the last 8-9 games remaining.
Yeah, for sure. And Roman, where you are, it maybe hasn't been quite such a happy international break, given that Lionel Messi returned with a bit of an injury, plus Luis Suarez and Ousmane Dembele also have fitness issues. How big of a concern is that for Barcelona ahead of what is a very big game where you are this weekend, the Catalan derby against Espanyol?
Well, if we're expected to play with Boateng, Malcolm and the Coutinho we're seeing lately, I would be quite worried, to be honest. So
I would watch that. I would be interested to see that.
Yeah, exactly. But I would actually be very worried, I'd say. Because, come on, I mean, those three players are decent players, but of course they're not top quality level. And playing against Espanyol, which is always tough, even though we really dominated them in the first game this season, wouldn't be very positive. Although it's true we have a good comfortable space in the standings where we can allow ourselves to lose a few points. But hopefully Luis Suarez will be back for the game. Possibly Messi should be back too, although this injury he's had for a while, it's like coming and going, and he's had some games where he hasn't been at 100%. But hopefully he'll get past that as soon as possible. And thankfully this happened during the break where they've had time to kind of recover a bit, and if this would have happened during La Liga, it would have been an absolute disaster. So hopefully we'll have at least Suarez and Messi back for the game against Espanyol, and that will be decent enough, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one there at the Camp Nou on Saturday, 4:15. La Liga, of course, back this weekend. It all kicks off on Friday night with Girona against Athletic Club. I'm going to ask you before we go, what of the fixtures this weekend are standing out the most for you? What do you think is the most interesting and why? Paco, can you tell us first?
Well, obviously the Partidazo prediction choice this week is Sevilla-Valencia, because it's been an awesome week for Valencianistas. In fact, it's literally awesome. You know, from Monday to Sunday, Monday 18th to Sunday 24th, it was perfect. No beefs, no struggles, no disappointments, just pure bliss watching how Valencia celebrated their centenary. And yeah, after a perfect week, people expect the best from their lads. So I think that visiting Sanchez-Pizjuan after the new change in the bench and seeing Pablo Machin sacked and having now Monchi back at the helm of the sports direction and watching, this is super old school, you know, Caparrós on the bench. Valencia need to go back to the roots, need that attitude from the 2004 days, and they need to win that game. If they really want to show everyone that they want to be Champions League contenders, they need to perform properly in hostile territory, and they need a win, which would be huge for them at Sanchez-Pizjuan.
Yeah, that's all makes sense. It's going to be an interesting one. And of course, yeah, as you mentioned, Partidazo predictions are our weekly segment where we try to guess the correct results. I say we, mostly Paco, guesses the correct results. That'll be coming out later in the week, so stay tuned for that on our Twitter account, at La Liga Lowdown. Roman, which La Liga match are you most looking forward to? You are allowed to say the Catalan derby, but you have to justify it if you do.
Okay, then I won't say it. I think there's also really other good games, such as the Celta-Villarreal. They're both fighting for survival. Villarreal is a bit on top, still has a small margin, but still a win from Celta would put them back in that really close to that relegation zone. So that could be a nice game to watch. And I'm also looking forward to the Madrid-Huesca game to see how Zidane evolves against the team, which is also like trying to pull off the great escape and maybe can get out of there. So it'll be a good game to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, we've got Getafe against Leganés as well. A Southern Madrid derby with Getafe trying to go for Champions League football, and Leganés still not completely safe. So that's going to be another one to watch out for. Basically, every game La Liga have done as well coming back from this international break, almost every game is a cracker. And we'll be covering it all, of course, on La Liga Lowdown at our Twitter account. That's at La Liga Lowdown. You can find us there. As mentioned, the Partidazo predictions videos will be coming up, and we'll be telling you what's going on, and we'll be bringing you our podcast next week back in the usual format talking about La Liga. We hope you enjoyed this international break special edition. I want to thank both Paco and Roman for staying up, pulling their eyes open after that quite boring Malta game to discuss it and tell us what's going on with Spain. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.
We'll be right back. This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.